Hi, it's a Thursday morning. I want to say a few words about the Parsha before I go off to school. This week, of course, you have Shmini with the death of Nadav and Avihu, talked about many times. But I have a little bit of a different angle. The famous question is, what did Nadav and Avihu do wrong? And the Chazal are all over the place on that. I think you know that. First of all, you go into Chazal, you have four reasons, and really, like eight reasons. And then if you look at the regular Mepharshim, you have more and more reasons. You know, so the usual ones, they were drunk, or they didn't wash their feet, or they didn't take they didn't consult anybody, or like the Barbara says, they started doing while the father was still performing his service. And the most interesting one always is, you know, the Shaduchim angle. Shachotzim Hoya, they were too arrogant. Harbi Noshima Yoshua Zagunas Mamtinas Lehem, remember that one? They wouldn't marry any girl because she wasn't chashu enough for them. It's like by the Hasidim, you know, Yichus is everything, and nobody can match my Yichus, therefore I can't get married because nobody's in the Parsha. Right? They used to say, Achi, Achi Avinu Melech, Achi Imenu Nasi, Avinu Kohen Gadol, Anu Shnei Skan Kohanim, Eiza Isha Hogenes Lono. Right? There's no girl that can match our Yichus. My father's the Ger Rebbe, my mother's the Belzer Rebbe, this one, you know, nobody is in the right Madrega. Which therefore means they attribute it. What they all have in common is a certain, at least it seems to me, is a certain arrogance. That seems to be a problem. And there ain't no room for arrogance in the Mishkan. And yet, you can't help but be arrogant to a certain degree if you're a Kohen serving in the Mishkan, in the Beis HaMikdash. I'm a Kohen. If I was serving in the Beis HaMikdash, I would feel superior to somebody else because you can't do it and I can do it. You know, it's kind of natural. So you have to be able to take your feelings of, I suppose, anyway, you have to take your feelings of specialness and sort of channel them into a sense of noblesse oblige. In other words, if I'm given this opportunity, you're not, then I have a greater responsibility to serve the public. You know what I'm saying? It seems like they were deficient in that. On the other hand, as you know very well, there's two schools of thought when it comes to Nodem Avihu, and some say they were very holy, and they died because of ecstasy and klois hanefesh, and because they were too holy. So, will the real Nodem Avihu stand up? It's impossible to do that. So sometimes if you're in a frum mood, you go for the positive shot. If you're not in a frum mood, you go for the negative shot. These are all in Chazal. They're all in the Ramban and the Bein HaBechaya and the Rechaim and so forth. You know, just check it out. I would tell you just something occurred to me this year. And I could be wrong. Just you know, what seems to me. I won't make this long. I have to go to school. Consider the following. Nadav and Avihu were from the 70 that went up the mountain at the end of Mishpatim, right after the Ten Commandments are pronounced, Hashem says Moshe goes to the top of the mountain, Aaron goes a little lower him, and the Nadav and Avihu and the 70 elders go below that. And they have an experience where they see God, Vayechso Solhim, Vayochlo Vayishto, right? And they sat down and had a picnic, pull out sandwiches. Now, Yeshto Arshon L'Shvach, Yeshto L'Gadah, I have talked about this many times. In Hasidic literature especially, you say, the fact that Nadav and Avihu ate there was a good thing. They were malin in their tzitzis and in the food. You understand? It's sublime. That is, all joking aside, like the theological background for the Tish, and like the Mesil Sisharm says in the chapter of Kedusha, you know, the highest madrig is to take the Gashmis and turn into Ruchnias, etc., etc. So you see, it's a good thing. However, there are plenty of Chazals, the other school of thought, that said that it was a disgrace. In other words, they did the wrong thing. They didn't act with the proper solemnity. I mean, how can you go in and pull out a picnic? So in other words, basically, the rabbi's giving a speech, and right there in the shul, you're doing Kiddush Rishon. Right there in the shul. Let's put it this way. If your local Orthodox rabbi knew, suppose I told you it was, I don't know, you know, the Vilna Gaon was in the shul, right? Came to visit. I mean, some really big person. And you're going to sit there and have a Kiddush Rishon in the shul, right then and there, right? So that'd be a tremendous disgrace, a big sin, let's put it that way. And here they were in the presence of God. So it's a big Avera. And I think the Medrash, I remember, says over there, why didn't Hashem strike him down over there? He didn't want to ruin the occasion. So I guess he figured he'd ruin the Yom HaShmini instead. Because in other words, he waited to punish them in a different time. But they were punished for this reason. If that's the case, they felt too comfortable in the presence of God, right? Too comfortable. And it has to be a sense of awe. Now, I imagine that they were looking at Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu had a unique relationship, and they tried to copy that unique relationship, but they weren't Moshe. It's a little bit later, like the story of Aaron and Miriam, when they speak against Moshe, and Hashem says, you're not in the same level. B'chol basic nemanu, you know, Moshe is Moshe. He's a special case. So Moshe indeed argues with Hashem, disobeys Hashem in the sense that, you know, like Hashem said, don't take the Erev Rav, and Moshe does anyway. Hashem says, I'm coming in 2 days to give the Torah. Moshe says, make it 3 days. You know, we find these kind of funny things. Hashem says, tell everybody, Kashli kol b'chor petek orechem b'nei Yisrael. Moshe goes and gives his own speech. But that's because Moshe and Hashem was a different story. And remember, Hashem heavily recruited him at the burning bush. Moshe didn't want the job. So it is a basic principle of the Jewish religion that Moshe is unique. Unique means you can't be like that. Okay? It's an ideal. You can sort of strive for it. But every ideal, by definition, means you can't reach it. You understand? So don't go imitate Moshe. And seems to me that they thought, you know, Moshe is going up the mountain. He's doing this now. He can tell Hashem whatever he wants. We can do it also. And that's the idea. Now, why can we do it? Because we're the nephew. We're in the royal family. Our father is Aaron Cohen. Well, all of which was true. I'm sure they knew more about Yiddishkeit than others. I'm sure that's true. B'krovai kodesh v'alpenei kol ekoved. No question about that. But what did they do with this superiority? You get what I'm saying? What did they do with superiority? They felt, by us, we can, you know, we can pull out something to eat, right? So basically, you're living in a fast lane. I would call this the Choni HaMa'agel lane, right? Because that's exactly what I'm Choni HaMa'agel. For whatever reason, was that type of guy. That's what it comes across. Remember, he drew the circle. He said, God, I want the rain. I don't want this rain. I want that rain. And Shem ben Shetach said, I guess, if it was up to me, we would put you in Cherem. But Hashem listens to you. So in other words, clearly, you have a special relationship like Moshe Rabbeinu, right? I don't know why, the rabbi said, Shem ben Shetach, but I see it, right? Because the truth of the matter is like this. When he said more rain, it came out more rain. When he said less rain, it came out less rain. And he said, I want middle rain, it came out middle rain. Okay. So empirically, you see, if for whatever reason, this guy, Choni HaMa'agel, stands in special relationship with the Lord in a way that Shem ben Shetach does not. You understand? In a way that the big rabbis don't. So there's two madrigas. There's this highly unusual one, and then there's the regular one. And they obviously transposed one and the other, and they thought they're in the unique category, and they weren't in the unique category. So that's a certain shachtzan, that's a certain arrogance. Right? Now, it wasn't an arrogance that came from nowhere. It was true. You know, the mother was Elisheba. She's the sister of Nachshon Ben Aminadab. She's the wife of Aaron. I mean, you can't get a bigger yichus and all that stuff. That is true. But, you know, you can't pull out Kish Rishon in the middle of God speaking. Or, as the Abarbanel says, Aaron is doing his carb and all that, and they're supposed to wait till he's finished, and they go and do their thing right away. Meaning, we can start Musaf, even though the speech is still going on. You know, the sermon's still going on. And I guess they figured, our father is Aaron, it doesn't matter, and all that, and Aaron wouldn't have minded, you know, and so on and so forth. But it was that's the Avera. Now, here's the thing. If you feel that way, then you can understand why in Parsha Shmini, they had their own idea, bring their own carbon, because they can do it, their own Ketores. It's not 100% clear. I've always been confused. On one hand, it sounds, you know, some say that they did the sin was doing the Ketores on the outside altar instead of the inside altar. But it certainly seems like they did on the inside. And they even say in the Torah's Kanim, they went lifnai v'lifnin, which means they want to bring their thing, their Ketores, inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And it seems that they died in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which is why Moshe has to tell the other two to pull them out. And who is it? Ramban or somebody says they had to pull them out with hooks because you can't go in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It's a whole... I don't have the time this morning to go into great detail on this. Where exactly it happened, they died, you know, it's not clear, at least to me. By that I mean there are different opinions. But regularly, let's say they took, in other words, so Moshe is doing the telling Aaron to kravel mizbeach, do all your different sacrifices the way you're described, prescribed, and the Jewish people sacrifice the way it's prescribed. And meanwhile, these two are not waiting, and they're going right into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now, wait a minute. You know, and I know, that the idea of bringing a Ketores in the Kodesh HaKadoshim is at the very core of the Yom Kippur ceremony, that the Kohen Gadol, and only the Kohen Gadol, does once a year. Right? Aaron HaKohen, afterwards, the Kohen Gadol goes in exactly that way with the Ketores into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and all the symbolism that's involved over there, and that does the Kapara, and that's like the central aspect of the Yom Kippur ceremony, is it not? So it's quite remarkable in that regard. Because here they are, they're doing it. It wasn't Yom Kippur, right? But they felt it's appropriate for them to do it, and that's where the Aish destroyed them. As I've said many times, it's not literal. The fire didn't go into their nostrils, because it says Gufan Kaim Nishmas in this Rephis. So the fire burned their Neshama. The Neshama is not a physical thing to be burned by a physical fire. So it means Aish Yotzeh Meis Hashem is the expression, something came out from before the Lord, meaning some kind of a death thing, and they dropped dead. Right? That's what it means. When it says the fire burned them, it means they dropped dead. And there are no medical reasons. So you see, it's min hashamayim. It's not like they had two heart attacks and an autopsy would have revealed heart failure. They just dropped dead. That's another way of saying, Eish Yotzeh Meis Hashem, and it went into their nostrils and it killed them. You see? Which, by the way, the idea of going in the nostrils, I'll tell you where it leads me to think. I haven't seen anybody say this. Maybe I'm wrong. They brought their own Ketores. What is the story with the Ketores? The funny part about the Ketores is that it includes the Chelmana, which is the bad-smelling spice. Of course, when you mix it in the right proportion, 1 in 11, it comes out that it's okay. It's like I say, Tabasco or something like that. Or a lot of things. In itself, it smells bad, but you mix it together the right way, it smells good. The final product smells good. But the Ketores represents the bad Jews, the inferior Jews. And to you and I, that lies at the very heart of the Ketores experience. That precisely the Achdus that it represents, that all the Jews, even the Chelbana, in the right way, in the right proportion, are included. That's the mystical entity of Klal Yisrael that I speak about many times. And that's what Hashem likes for one reason or another. Because theoretically, Hashem should only like the Haredim. Right? You know, theoretically, matter of fact, Hashem should only like my group. Right? Theoretically, Hashem should only, believe me, every group thinks that they're special. No question. The yeshivas think that they're special in the Lord, and, you know, he likes them more than anyone else. Lubavitch, Satmar, Hasidim, Snagdim, Svardim, Ashkenazim, Modern Orthodox, you name it. No question, open Orthodox think that they stand in better with the Lord than anyone else. That's how it goes. But the point of the Torah is you don't. They're all together in one mishmash. But the Torah represents the inferior Jews mixed together with the superior Jews. I can imagine that this probably offended Nineveh of you, because the inferior Jews are the cause of all the trouble, and the truth of the matter is we're better off without them. And they knew that Moshe Rabbeinu made a mistake taking in the Eir of Rab, because they saw what happened as a result of the golden calf. Consider this well. If they hadn't taken the Eir of Rab, according to Chazal now, anyway, if they hadn't taken the golden calf, he would have skipped all this junk, because they wouldn't have made a golden calf. It could even be that they would have been more courageous in facing the Philistines, and they might have gone 3 days in Israel. I don't know. You know, we could explore that. You know, because lo nochem elhim nankas anderka is plishtim. Does that mean all the Jewish people like that, or the naysayers would have swayed the rest of the Jews to run away because they say, look what happened to the Philistines? That's very likely something like that happened. Let me put it this way: the scaredy cats would have made it problematic for them. So here you are, none of it of you, and really, 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 we should have gone to Israel right away. And really, 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 we should have skipped the Mishkan. And really, 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 we should have taken Eretz Yisrael 1, 2, 3. And really, 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 we should be in Yerushalayim, Yaakov, building the base of Mikdash. And really, 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 you and me, none of an Abi, should be getting ready to work at the base of Mikdash and take the place of Moshe Aaron at the right time. And none of that happened. And none of that happened, not because of my fault, because of your fault, because of the inferior Jews, because of the bad Jews, the Asafsuf, the Erev, and call whatever you want. And so, this was the problem. And I'll tell you again, Hashem told Moshe, according to Chazal, don't take the Eir of Rab, and Moshe did anyway. So what does that sound like? It sounds like, really, the best Ketores would be no Chelbana. You understand? No chelbina. And that would mean we only want it from Jews. Listen, I hate to say it, but that is the Orthodox sociology today. They figure, this is. I'm not saying this is a happy way, the opposite, but I'm saying it's a metzius. The way they say it's like this, listen, the non-from are falling away, they're going to disappear from intermarriage, assimilation, and all that other kind of stuff. In another generation or two, there'll only be the from left. So we need more chelbina. Now, really, 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 the from will produce their own chelbina. We got plenty of that, but from an external point of view, only be the Shomer Shabbos left. And what will that mean? The whole experiment of the non-Shomer Shabbos was a failure because you see that sociologically, you see that historically, in a Darwinian sense, the survival of the fittest, and those who were not fit did not survive. And those that didn't keep Shabbos and things like this did not survive. That's the way people are going to imagine it, I would suggest. And that's wrong. That's wrong. Even the worst Jews. Hashem wants them, it has to be part of the process. Now, I know that intellectually, I don't feel in my kishkas, to be honest with you. When I see these people marching for Hamas and all the rest of it, when Israel destroyed and all the rest of it, either maybe they're really not Jewish, those Yichus-wise. If they are, seems to me like we could do without them. But apparently I'm wrong. You know what I'm saying? At least mystically. They say the Baal Shem Tov died because of anguish. Baal Shem Tov. Because the Frankists converted. Who the heck wants the Frankists? They were sick beyond sick. But I guess I'm wrong. In other words, you need the chelbina there. It's part of the mixture. And I think that none of an Aviyu tainted that it actually smells better without the chelbina. It's true that you can take this foul-smelling thing and in the right mixture, it loses any smell that you have of it because like butter with the others, right? I'm sure that's what happens. But the foul-smelling thing is what it is. And it would be even better smelling if you didn't have the chelbina. And then you wouldn't even have to worry about being mavatal, the bad smell. And that's probably the Ketores HaZor, whatever it is that they brought. And the proof that they would have was they would say, which one smells? No, stand here in an olfactory way, you know, and do a smell test. Which one is better? And after all, Hashem says he wants something that smells good. Reach Nichoach. He says so. So, we're doing even more from. Because we have a Ketores without that. And the reason I say this is because, what was the punishment? A fire came out and went in their nostrils. Right? What's the language in the Chumash? Let me see here for a second. A Teitze Eish. And I think it says that somewhere that the fire went in the nose. That's what happened. And that would mean to me that what do you call it? That it was a smell thing. Hashem said, don't tell me what's there. Your arrogance led you to think that you know what smells better. And I tell you, however you understand it, it smells better with the chelbina. Right? Meaning, that's what I want. That's the reich nichoach. That's the reich nichoach. And that's the whole Indian of the Ketores. And whenever you want to do it, and when you mess with the Ketores, it's a bad effect. Remember, Uzio got leprosy for doing that sort of thing. So, it seems that none of an Aviyu felt comfortable enough if they could eat and do Kiddush Rishon back in Har Sinai, like at the end of Mishpatim, then they figured that they can act their way even when it comes to the Ketores. And they thought that they can even improve on the Ketores. So as Hashem is making, and let me put it this way, and it's called a hitter mitzvah. Because what's the idea of hitter mitzvah? You do the mitzvah even in a more enhanced way. Why? It's not necessary. Because you look at all the mitzvahs, it's sort of like a hierarchy. It's possible to do it in a b'di'evid way, right? But it's better to do it in a hit or miss way. The Mesil Sisharm himself even says, you can't expect everybody to chassid. He says these words. Can't expect to be a chassid. It's enough. Then you give a law for everybody just to have the minimum. Right? But it's incumbent upon anybody who wants to be a chassid to, you know, on his own, on her own, go the extra mile. So here also, we're going to do the Torah, so we're going to go the extra mile. We're going to do it better. And then you realize that this is different, right? Because it's not like you're taking a Matbeva mitzvah and doing it one way. It's even better. You know what I'm saying? It's even better. And you can't do better with Hashem. Not on something like this, right? And nowadays, we all have a little bit of none of the view in us, I would think. Because everybody figures you can do without the Chalbana. Including me. When I'm not in a thinking mood. Just in a Kishka mood. And I get it. And circumstances seem to sort of empirically demonstrate this. But it's wrong. And the story of Nanavia reminds us that it's wrong. That's what I think happened. I can't be sure. And there's so many different sources which give so many different explanations. Especially when we get to the later before, you know, the Meshach Chacham and all that. But Libi Amrili, that this is the kind of thing that happened. I'm trying to see. The Pasuk doesn't say it went in their noses, but I've seen. Maybe it's in the Medrash or something like that, right? They went in their nostrils and they just perished. You see? Which is why they say, Gufan Kaim Nishmas Nisrefes. Because when it says, Vateitzi Eshem Lefnei Hashem Batochel Osam, it can't mean it in the sense that you read it literally, which is a fire came and totally consumed them, that they were burnt to a crisp. Because you know that they weren't. And anyway, the Chazal tell you, Gufan Kayim. So what does it mean by Tochel Osam? I can't remember where it is. One of you will find it and remind me, or not. But when it says the Tochel Osam, it means it killed him. And that's what they mean by Nishmas and Nisrefes. But again, the burning of the Neshama is you know, as I say, a metaphysical reality. It's not a physical reality. The Neshama is not a thing that a fire can burn in. So if it's Eish Hashem, it means a force from Hashem. Anyway, I just thought that that's interesting. And with that, I have to run off to school. So with that, I wish you all a good day.